Good morning, guys, and welcome to the Weekender. We have Carlos in. We are giving away a magnificent prize. Mm-hmm. Well, we're giving away a copy of
Operation Wildfire, the box, the battle box that includes O12 against Shazbasti, okay?
And the reason we're giving that away will make so much more sense in a little while. Carlos, welcome onto the show, man. It's an absolute pleasure.
Glad
to
be
have
here.
You.
Glad to be here back in Northern Ireland.
Right. We're going to talk about Defiance, and we're going to talk a little bit about N4. But first, Defiance.
Yes.
Which Okay. So at this stage, I know a little bit about this project.
Yeah, we've spent a week making content with Carlos. Yeah.
And we three Metal Kings, along with Carlos here, have played Defiance, okay? For me personally, Defiance is one of the most significant games, probably in the last few years. And the reason for that is Defiance, to me, is the most accessible route into Infinity that I could have hoped for. Infinity is a massive game. Like, do you even know how many SKUs, how many products are in the Infinity range now?
We're trying to reduce the SKU spectrum. I mean, it's too much. We're trying to reduce it to just have like 50 for every faction, but we are reaching all 9 factions.
Yeah.
So 10 even, I would say. So it's huge. Yeah, it's huge.
Your latest drop was the O12.
Yeah, and that is a problem, not only for us, because we have a space, okay? But imagine for retailers, for distributors, too, and it's a constant. Now this SKU is discontinued. Now this, every month, Corvus Belli brings more miniatures to the range.
Yeah.
And the hardcore fans do not have enough.
Yeah.
Hardcore fans are constantly asking for the next thing or the needs for the army. Mm-hmm. Because having 9 factions is like having 9 children. They have needs constantly.
Yes.
So everybody has, gaps to fill. And also giving meaning to all those SKUs, to all those miniatures, requires a very dense rule book, very dense set of rules. Because people will... And the hardcore fans that play nowadays Infinity are not beginners, okay?
No.
Because we have the game really after 4 expansions right now. That's why next year is the M4 moment, really a good moment for
4th edition
reboots in a certain way. But what I find when I see interviews of them is that they really like the complexity. They really like the deepness of it. For a beginning, it's especially exciting. Like, oh my God, there's an ocean here of stuff to read. And not only fluff. They also like Infinity, still nowadays, is a game that if you get into... If you really spend one whole day reading rules, you may find something. You may find a combo that nobody noticed in your meta or maybe online even. You will find, I think that I have something here. And that's why when you speak with the players, you find that this guy is an engineer, this guy is a scientist, and this guy has an incredible degree. They have brains.
Yeah.
So for them, it's like, okay, I'm delving into this. Why nobody is using a sniffer and a sniffer launcher when I can really use forward observer with no line of fire here and then shoot the guided ammunition and stuff like that? Why is this? It's difficult, maybe it's tricky, maybe no one is expecting this in the next tournament, maybe, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's why the Infinity Army that you guys built is so, so useful, because you can just go through your factions, find all your rules.
Yeah. You know the story about the army? It's incredible. I mean, back in the day, Jesus, a guy who now is in the company, but back in the day, he was an Infinity fan with the skills. He made the army for free. He wanted to make it. And it was not like this one, but pretty close.
Oh, yeah.
I arrived to Gen Con, first time Gen Con in the United States. I find a super hardcore fan over there who was already, without even having the Warcraft program, he was already sharing and introducing into Infinity lots of people. And he told me, how much did you pay for the army? And I go like this, 0. It was me with a fan. And the guy looks at the floor, laughs for a few minutes, and then tell me, you have no idea of how important the army builder is for getting people inside this game.
It's that reducing the barriers to entry. Having just a resource like that that people can deep dive into, especially for a game like Infinity, is so key.
Yeah.
And when we released N3, the army was not ready yet. For 2 months or something like that, people was hysterical. Hysterical. the most passive aggressive comments on our social media and stuff like that.
Don't worry, you're not learning that. Anytime any new book gets released for any system, the first thing is, when is X, Y, and Z getting updated?
So, I understand what you're telling, because now we're getting into Defiance, and Defiance works with the Aristeia engine. Defiance has these dice. Okay, maybe you can say that. Uses these dice. Can I speak from you? What I've seen is that once I deployed all the cardboard on the cards on this table, and I read your character or something like that, okay, this is your attack, this is your defense, Warren was like, okay. And from that moment on, you already catch how it goes.
Yeah. You explained to him his character, you explained to Jerry his character, and I said, look, don't say anything.
Yeah.
I'm going to explain my character.
Yeah.
And I was able to pick it up.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm going with this. You know, Infinity, there's no doubt about it. Infinity is a significant game, okay? And there's got to be people out there like myself who are huge fans of Infinity, but we don't have the time. And in some instances, we don't have a lot of the expertise or whatever to necessarily commit to the game. So we're fans a little bit on the outside, a little bit on the outer rim.
That is what we call rebound. There is people who likes the aesthetic, who likes the look of it, and they rebound. Operation Ice Storm, Operation Wildfire, Red Veil, those boxes allow people to get into Infinity, enjoy the box, and if they're fine with it, they're fine with it. That's why they're successful, because you can enjoy Infinity just with that box. And then if you want, but that is like, we're scuba divers right now, okay? And we like to jump on the water and swim and see the fish.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Operation Ice Storm. Getting into Infinity Tournament and seeing is like getting into the abyss, okay? And going down, and your oxygen bottle is not enough. You need that liquid thing from the abyss movie. It's like... And that's, so for some people, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, I like this.
Yeah.
Because every single battle, every single tournament is different. And you listen to the podcast after a big tournament and everybody's like, okay, what happened? It happened this. And it's totally different from previous experiences. Mm-hmm. That is rich. Okay, it's rich. But
Defiance for me.
But rebounding, I mean, and making casual and friendly for people who get it immediately. In the third term, Jerry had already totally been hacking the system. He has established priorities. He has really realizing many tactical decisions there.
It's the fact that the game itself lends itself to that, where you have such a broad base that you can build on, that regardless of what the heroes are and what the forces you're fighting in there, just even going the turn sequences alternating hero and then enemy. But as to how you choose to manipulate that turn sequence is up to you. So if you want your tank to go first, you can, but then that will have repercussions. Or maybe after the first turn you go, I'm going to activate, and then next turn you can activate Warren.
Yeah.
But then the thing that's right beside you is actually the thing that's pulled out. So they've already gone, so it's pointless activating now. Something else has become a greater threat because they still have the chance to activate later. And it's just such a simple mechanic that means you can really deep dive in without being overwhelmed by a ton of additional rules.
Yeah.
It also lets you as players have a discussion on your tactics around the table rather than having one person quarterbacking the whole time.
Well, what happens, what Defiance has unlocked for me is but having played Defiance, Carlos, right, I feel that I can fully enjoy the Infinity universe, okay? In a game that I can play casually with alongside my friends. You know, I can get people together. I could even get my family together. Even some of my children are nearing the age easily where they could get to grips with Defiance with a little bit of help.
You're not the first person who tells me this.
Yeah.
I mean, more people are like, this is family friendly even.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely it is. And to have that ability, because the interest, what really struck me about Defiance was it doesn't feel like Infinity Light. No. Do you know what I mean? It feels, it is easy. It is so, so easy. Everything you need is just sitting there in front of you. I'm not delving through hundreds of pages of rule books. Or
having
and
to
like
memorize
that.
Rules. Yeah,
yeah, there's nothing to memorize. There's nothing to do. It's all there in front of me. Mm-hmm. But I never felt like I was being shortchanged on the Infinity experience. I feel like I'm exploring Infinity. And I'm so excited by the background that you guys have come up for Defiance. I'm not going to talk about it because we're going to keep some stuff for you guys to enjoy in some content that we have coming out. But this is why, if ever there was a game out there that had the potential to unlock another huge aspect of popularity, it was Infinity. It needed something else, something for the casual players to immerse themselves in the game. And Defiance, this is why, for me, this is one of the most significant games in the last number of years, is because it has unlocked a universe that, to many of us, our love for it could only go so far. You know,
it comes because it's a cooperative game, in my opinion. I mean, Corvus Belli had one-on-one tournament scene games with Aristeia and Infinity, you against the other guy. This one is all together against an AI, because the bad guys in this game are controlled by an AI, by artificial intelligence deck of cards. So, yeah. Comes from that, and it's totally compatible with Infinity. I mean, when the moment comes, you realize that all the miniatures will be playable in Infinity, and it's the same quality of the Infinity figures. It's metal being cast in our facilities, so the quality will be the top quality of that we can bring, and which is the top quality of metal miniatures in the market right now. It's like that. I mean,
do you want to show some of this stuff off? Actually,
just a
little bit that would.
Yeah,
there is a
page up on the internet at the minute, so you can get a look at your heroes and stuff.
Yeah. Well, while you're showing that off, Carlos, do you want to talk just a little bit? Give people a little bit of insight into what the Kickstarter is about. So it's a Kickstarter exclusive.
Yeah.
The Kickstarter model is what is hopefully going to enable this to come to life, you know, because it is a massive project.
Well, it's something different from, as you know, Corvus Belli sends their products to retailers, to distributors, everything. But this one is Kickstarter, and it's Kickstarter exclusive. So it's a very limited opportunity window to get the all the goodies. And the wave of content that is coming is huge. I mean, right now while we are speaking, the artists are still making stuff.
Yeah.
And images and more sculpts. Because apart from what comes in the core box or the collector box, there is a ton of stuff yet to come. And there will be many stretch goals. I mean, I really want to give a shout out to everyone over there so they focus their attention by the end of October, beginning of November, to the Kickstarter Defiance page, because the way it has been structured is in order to keep people looking and F5-ing it constantly, because stuff will appear constantly, okay? Every 15 minutes, something will unlock, probably.
Now, there is something this game also does that I think I've had a problem with Infinity for a few years, is I feel sometimes a little bit lost in the narrative of the world. This gives me a very clean, self-contained story that I can follow and use as my first wedge into the world to begin exploring it.
Yeah, because it's not so much about armies. It's an adventure with heroes in it. Yeah. It's not so massive a scope. It's suddenly we are in narrow corridors and there's a drama, an intensity to it, a countdown happening and stuff like that.
So the key touch points for anybody that is looking to jump in on this is one, Kickstarter exclusive.
It's
a project that is being that Kickstarter is going to enable, basically, because it is an enormous project. You guys have never done a bigger box.
No, nothing like that. Nothing this scale. That's why the sculptures began making the skulls at the beginning of the year because they have to squeeze the time for sculpting miniatures while they are sculpting the regular releases for every game.
Yeah.
So when the whole project was like put on paper, it was like, holy, we have to care about being able to make all this stuff. And I know that there is a moment during the campaign where we will cross a line where the stuff has to be made.
Yes.
Because we will promise a gazillion million of miniatures, and extras and stuff. So it's going to be huge. In fact, depending on the level of success of this project, it might push further other stuff that we'll have for 2020.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The miniatures are metal, which I have no issue with, because two of the reasons I have no issue with that is, A, I know the quality of them are going to be superb. Mm-hmm. I love the heft of metal minis anyway. But also, you guys will be doing the manufacturing in-house.
Oh, yeah. So that's absolutely Corvus Belli. And let's say something else. Not only the miniatures will be metal and made by Corvus Belli, where it's going to be a ton of miniatures, and they are going 90% of them. Okay, maybe we repeat an extra additional copy of one or two of them, but every single enemy will be different. Different skull, unique miniature. Okay, yeah, that's something that I want to stress about. Mm-hmm. Because, it takes a lot of work from us to make things that way, but it's what we think, that how can we make this Kickstarter or Dungeon Crawler special? Mm-hmm. Because there are many out there, many super projects. I see super projects, incredible projects, lovely, but sometimes they get, this box comes with 150 miniatures. Yeah, okay, fine, but that army is composed by the one guy and 15 several copies of the same guy, you know?
Yeah.
We didn't want that because...
That's not Infinity.
And it's, in Infinity, nobody wants to repeat that.
Yeah, it's not Infinity. You know, it's, and Defiance is part of the Infinity ecosystem.
Yeah, just looking for having our own Virtue, okay? So it's going to be very, very high quality. And also every single miniature is different. It's a unique sculpt. We're going for that, okay?
Yeah.
Apart from that, being Kickstarter, limited opportunity window, metal miniatures, cooperative experience, which something doesn't happen for Corvus Belli now is happening, totally compatible with Infinity, which is an added value to the whole thing. I would love, for me, the most amazing thing is that many new people, newcomers, get into this game.
Yeah.
Not necessarily having to get into Infinity, that enjoy this game. Get this box.
Well, I know that the existing player base is going to enjoy this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, they're going to love this. It's a new way for them to experience something they already love. But it's the circles outside of that, and I'm in some of those circles, you know, where I'm not in the hardcore, but it's what it unlocks. It's the bridge for us to be able to say, right, that is how I explore and enjoy the Infinity Universe. And you want to know what is most special about an experience like this, a dungeon crawling experience. And I know a thing or two about dungeon crawlers. Dungeon crawlers unleash your ability to flexibly collect.
Mm.
You're not just about building one army. You're about building out an entire experience. Mm. So if a dungeon crawler takes off and is well supported, it begins to potentially unlock all sorts of models that you can bring down that you think, I would love to own that. Yeah. I'd love to meet that in the dungeon or in the spaceship or in the whatever it is that I'm playing. And suddenly, the flexibility a game like that gives to me as someone that wants to explore a universe, I don't have to say, I'm committed to Hakislam and I need to make sure that I always get that right. For this, I'm going to dip into a bit of Pano. I can dip into a bit of Hakislam, the Nomads, boom, 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 and start to pull all together. And, oh, man, for casual players.
You're in your happy place, Warren.
I'm in a very happy place. And you will see how happy I am whenever we come to start putting the content out.
Funny story. In Spain, Aristella really hit very, very strongly in the tabletop gaming communities. So that situation of, I like this game. Oh, is this based on something bigger? Really? And finding players who, through Aristella, fine infinity, you know,
yeah,
which is the totally, you know, we were expecting this, but in Spain happening, especially in Spain, we sold out all the Spanish copies of Aristeia. We had to ask for more to China. So that sensation of, I like this, it's cute. Okay, fine. And suddenly, do you know that there's a huge sci-fi universe that this comes from? Oh, really? Mm-hmm. And then they click on the internet and it's like, oh my God, I'm lost here.
Yeah. So, N4. I would imagine that there are rumors circulating endlessly about N4 now.
Well, we announced N4 at Gen Con. We just put N4 on the screen and 2020.
Yeah.
You know? And for Corus Belli, when we announce something, it's like, oh my God, we cannot go back now. We already say it. The community was asking already for M4 long ago. They know when the game has advanced too much in one direction.
Yes.
The best moment for a game is when it arrives brand new edition. From a market perspective, is when it really recruits people. We can look at it as this kind of trumpet, you know.
Yeah.
When the moment of more people is playing the game is the new edition has just come out, and expansion after expansion, you're narrowing that reach that you have.
Mm-hmm.
That's why companies make new editions constantly. But for Corvus Belli, it's like, oh, wow, a new edition. Because N3 was released 2014 already.
Yeah.
So 2020, N4. I mean,
yeah, so 6 years, man.
6 years.
Yeah,
that's a good cycle for a rule system.
I mean, not you know, 1 year, one edition, or 2 years. Yeah. It requires a lot from us. So it's going to be a lot of work, because consider that we have like 600 SKUs out there already, and we have now to change the meta, the rules, the everything to still fit. Still reaching all those miniatures and giving them meaning, apart from the huge wave of new miniatures that will come. Okay, so it requires a lot, and there's a lot of special situations when you think you have a perfect rule that adapts to for everything. Suddenly, a new tiny miniature comes out. What about me? What about me?
Mm-hmm.
Because if this rule now changes to this, I'm totally screwed. Okay, well, change my profile.
Or he's standing there going, I am thy god.
Well, doesn't happen with everyone.
Do you want to put people's minds?
Don't you speak with your miniatures daily?
No, my miniatures don't talk to me. Do they talk to you, Carlos?
Okay, in Corvus Belli, we speak with them.
If you don't keep them on side, then they won't perform for you when you need them.
We allow them to stand on the table and speak to us in big meetings.
Yeah.
Is N4 going to use these colored dice?
No, it's not. It's not. That's,
there you go.
That's the rumor I keep
Don't worry, it's all going to D8 instead. You'll enjoy D8. It's very nice.
Anyway, there's the slight opportunity at that, because the Defiance Kickstarter is going to be huge and having tons of stretch goals. There's that little opportunity that if people get crazy enough and support the game crazy enough and we reach skyrocket numbers, maybe a mode for Defiance that allows players to compete one against another using the rules from Defiance, the Aristeia engine, that might happen. Mm-hmm. And I would love that to happen because I'm so much into beginner-friendly modes and games and stuff like that.
See, I would love to see those dice used in like a 5-mini v 5-mini sort of Black Ops v Black Ops sort of scenario. Could be cool.
But, now that you raise it, I'm going to put you on the spot, Carlos, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about beginner-friendly modes and things like that there, okay? N4 is going to be enormous. It's going to be huge. Are you guys considering people's entry point into the N4 Infinity? Or is it going to be, like, have you thought about how people get into it?
You made the best question. That is directly the best question, okay? Yeah. Because even before beginning the project of N4, the company, the needs of the company, the complexities of selling Infinity already gave us direction. Before beginning M4, we have the fan base telling, change full auto, change suppression fire. They care about the rules and they think about the rules as players, but the company also has its needs. Beginner-friendly M4 thing. Okay, that's why this whole structure of M4 is divided in two big blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Basic and advanced. Okay.
Ah.
Yeah. So to the rules developers, they were told you have to design this time. N3 was N3. Okay. And N3 had the Operation Ice Storm, Operation Red Bale, which encapsulates the game in a box, and mm-hmm. people can enjoy it like that. That worked out so well that now for M4 is like, no, we're going to divide, split in half the rules. And the basic will be like the level of game that you will enjoy in the Operation box.
Yeah.
So, but make it not just for the box. Make it for the whole range of miniatures, for a certain selection of miniatures.
Yeah.
So that project, which is the basic rules of M4, got its own name. It's now called Code 1. Code 1.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Okay. And it's like the first chapter. Once you played Code 1, with not all the miniatures from Infinity, just the ones you are told that they will have their profile of Code 1,
mm-hmm.
You will understand move, shoot, cover, mimetism, basic rules, okay? Mm-hmm. Then, at a different moment of 2020, full M4 will arrive, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we are really considering allowing people to play tournaments of Code 1. Allowing the army builder to have two buttons, mm-hmm. like Code 1 and full M4.
Yeah.
The mathematics is going to be different even because mm-hmm. not everybody in Code 1 is going to have all the weapons and all the abilities. So the cost of the troops change also.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like baby steps.
So even the organized, right. So this is, it sounds like a full commitment to saying, yeah, you're going to get full Infinity, but we're going to give you a pathway to grow into it.
Yeah.
And even that pathway, we're going to endeavor to fully support via organized play and so on.
Not only that, certain products will be labeled as Code 1 products.
Yeah.
Because that will make things also easier for retailers and distributors. They will know what is essential and what is advanced in mm-hmm. between the SKUs, I'm telling that.
Yeah.
So that has a huge meaning. Because nowadays, we cannot demand every retailer and store to know deeply how to play Infinity.
Yeah.
They constantly come to you and say, okay, you have like 600 SKUs. What do I need? I want to start selling Infinity in my store, but this is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the basics? And many times they give us, I have this budget, make the list for me.
Yeah.
And we inside Corusely have to make the essential list, adapting the budget to the guy. And we will do it because we're that crazy. But once we label the products and this is Code 1 and this is advanced, they will know what is essential.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And making things easier. So not only for the customer, also for the middleman.
Yeah.
Very good.
Well, like it's something about store owners. Remember that store owners, their job is not necessarily to play games. Their job is to give a really good store service.
Mm-hmm.
So it's knowing about the game is important, but they have 100 other jobs that they have to do. So the more simple that any company can make it for them, the better.
And then
the same for players. Yeah,
but even just for the space.
We have the Warcourse program in mm-hmm. Corvus Belli, which is so super hardcore players that love Infinity and love Aristeia can make tournaments and stuff like that. But they are usually very good advisors for stores. If there's a good relation between a store and a Warcourse, the Warcourse can perfectly tell him. Because something happened years ago. Corvus Belli released the Tunguska starter pack, for example, which for the fan base was like, oh my God, finally, Tunguska is here. But we didn't release it as the Gen Con product or as the Adepticon product or as the Super Star product. It was a normal release, monthly release. But for in terms of the hardcore fan, it was, oh my God, the second coming of Jesus, okay?
Yeah.
The middlemen, the distributors, for them it was just another monthly release.
Mm-hmm.
So when they order the amount of copies that they wanted of that SKU, which for them is just a line in an Excel file, they totally underestimated the reach of that product.
Mm-hmm.
So that at the end translated into many people were not able to get the box as soon as it arrived because it totally sold out immediately because the amount of copies that were ordered were...
Well, minimum below enough, expectations, yeah.
Because they didn't even knew that what was that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a problem. It's a problem because we are realizing since the beginning that every time we make a super box with a super thin week, with a super promotion, that box sells a lot. Mm-hmm. But the monthly releases are being more and more obscured during these years because they are not the super glamorous product, you know?
Yeah.
And then once in a while you do get that lightning strike product that just leaves you scrambling to make more.
It's like everybody wants to be in the spotlight because then inside the Infinity communities, the Infinity players, when a Superbox comes out and it's for Pano, the other faction players get jealous. Okay, because the glamorous moment is for Pano there. And then the next box comes and it's Nomads and everybody gets jealous of the Nomads. It's like that. I mean, it's super fun to be inside Infinity. It's super fun to be enjoying the game, the hardcore communities and everything. And the memes that they generate, it's super fun to be there. Mm-hmm. And it's home for me, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's a very positive community because I'm super exposed on the internet, okay? And my face is on the internet and they make memes with my face, but... They're not cruel. They're funny.
Okay. I did have to resist one you put up recently going, oh, caption this. I was just like, no, don't do it.
Well, guys, that is a little update just to whet the appetite for the end of the month.
One last thing. Okay, can I say one last thing?
Oh, yeah, go for it, man.
Well, we right now.
We see, we'll get you a camera. Here we go.
Let's go.
Woohoo! Defiance. There it is. The there sexy t-shirt.
Yeah. So we are here making the contents for Defiance. We are so excited about it. Remember, Kickstarter exclusive, Corvus Belli, Metal Miniatures, totally compatible with Infinity. Talking about compatibility with Infinity, there's one certain box that was released previously this year. I'm talking about Operation Wildfire box, okay?
Do we have a picture of the Wildfire box?
Yeah, I have the box content.
Let's get it. Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. Boop. So there's your terrain with your miniatures and everything you need to get up, running, and ready to play.
So the factions that comes in Operation Wildfire box, which is a battle pack with two balanced forces, are O12 and Sasvasti. Okay, can we have a closer look of the miniatures?
We do. Because so there's your combined
Sasvastis, army. Sasvastis, okay, and over them O12. The bad guys from Defiance are mostly Sasvastis, and other guys that will have a lot of presence in Defiance is O12. Mm. So... Operation Wildfire is here, Defiance is here, they go together in perfect harmony, okay? It's a product that if you already have, congratulations, because it fits perfectly with the next big thing that you're going to have, which is obviously Defiance, come on. But to celebrate Defiance, to celebrate that it's coming, we are going to give away a copy of Operation Wildfire here at the weekend there, courtesy of Corvus Belli, for you, okay?
Happy days. So guys, if you want to be in with a chance of winning that, remember all you have to do is to come on over to beastsofwar.com or on tabletop.com, post a comment on this post, and double your chances by putting a comment on the YouTube video. And remember to hit that subscribe button, hit the little bell button to ding our dong, and most importantly of all, share the video with someone who might be interested.
Yeah.
Because it helps these guys. But it also helps us as well, you know, because it's difficult with all of the billions of pieces of content that float around every day now, and everybody just watches all sorts of stuff. It's nice to get a little share because it just helps spread the word of cool stuff that's happening. Mm-hmm. Carlos, thank you for joining us, man. It is always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, guys, we'll be right back in 1 second. Hi, guys. Welcome back. You're not Carlos.
Ta-da! Carlos has left the building. But
what about if you talk with a lot of spes? There's a lot of spes here.
A lot of spes.
Be very good, Lloyd.
Yes, I'm sitting here next to Mr. Yeti.
Mr. Yeti. Okay, Lloydy, you're back just in time. Mm. Because we're going to tell them. We're going to tell them. Guys, we are hoping to do a Star Wars Legion hobby.
Oh, God. Hobby weekend?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for.
That's what.
A Star Wars Legion hobby weekend on the 13th of December. So the 13th to the 15th of December, starting on Friday the 13th, Justin. Perfect days to do Star Wars Legion, man.
Oh, God.
So Friday the 13th,
right.
Saturday the 14th, and Sunday the...
15th?
Yes, Justin, that's it. You got it, man. Of the 12th month?
Yes.
Of the 2019th year since the year of our Lord. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're there. Okay. Now, so
a hobby weekend, that means build and paint.
Yes. So we don't know exactly what's going to happen yet. We're canvassing for bums on seats.
Yep.
We will be doing digital tickets as well. Okay. Mm-hmm. For this is basically our last big blast of 2019. This is how we're going to pretty much, this is going to be like our Christmas party. Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're opening up to our cult members to come along, join us.
Yeah.
And we'll also open it up for digital tickets for anybody that can't make it but want to participate over the weekend from home. Uh-huh. We are now, we have, the response that we've got is good. So we are now going to go ahead with the planning of this. We'll be getting the tickets up as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We're just working out now what will be included in the ticket. There will be some minis in the ticket.
Yep.
There will most likely be a limited edition t-shirt in the ticket. I'm not sure what else is going to be in it. We will sit down. We will brainstorm on that.
Well,
careful now, because if you say something and we can't do it, you're going to make me feel like
No, I'm just thinking, you'll need primer if you're going to be painting.
Oh, you see, and here he goes. He immediately
can't do that in the digital ticket. Oh, no. Well, obviously, we can't do the primer on the digital ticket.
Let's just leave it at that.
Okay. I don't need you to brainstorm in front of me, Justin.
I thought you liked my random stream of consciousness.
Yes, but I like it. I like it whenever I can actually action it. Okay? So a small percentage of what you do is just pure genius, okay?
I know.
But you need to give me the opportunity to filter that.
See, the best thing about it is it's the week before the movie's released.
It's the week before.
That way, if the movie's crap, it's okay.
We don't know. Yeah, it doesn't impact on the hobby weekend. But the movie won't be crap. The movie will be amazeballs. What do you say?
I don't know. I read a headline today saying, oh, the true power of the Force will be revealed. And I thought, I don't want overpowered OTT stuff.
You don't want to know.
Midichlorians.
You don't want to know what it is.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
What do you see? There'll be some kind of manufacturing plant and they'll have tins of midichlorians and you'll Popeye it.
No more Death Stars. Or planets.
There's definitely going to be another Death Star.
So
we've had Death Star 1.
Yep, Death Star 2.
Which was massive, but actually was itty-bitty.
Yes.
We had a Death Star 2, which was massive and bigger than the itty-bitty one.
Uh-huh.
Then we had Death Star 3, which was a planet Death Star.
Yep.
Yes.
So now this is going to be Death Star number 4.
Yeah.
So where can you go?
Do you want a spoiler?
Dyson Sphere.
I'll give you a spoiler now. Death Star 4 is Death Star 2, because we've already seen it in the trailer.
Well, Death Star 2 is actually lying in the water, isn't it? We've seen
it. So there is a Death Star, Lloyd.
But what if there is actually a Death Star 4? What would it be? A Dyson Sphere, yeah? How big? And would it be a complete Dyson Sphere? Or would it be one of those kind of like webby kind of Dyson spheres?
See, I think it would be an incomplete one, just so they have a reason to be able to fly inside and drop a shot into the sun to blow it up.
So it'll be like Death Star 2, but inside out.
Yes, and I also believe that they'll probably build it around some form of red giant or the biggest star possibly found in our universe.
The biggest star in the universe. Do you know the biggest star in the universe is...
I know.
They are big. I watch these YouTube things.
Oh, yeah,
where they go from
my
the
Facebook
smallest
feed.
Thing to the biggest thing, and I enjoy
that. Yeah, I enjoy those.
Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, Jerry's just right in there in the middle.
I'm trying to work out who the biggest star is. I think it's probably Weird Al Yankovic.
Beetlejuice is pretty big. Yeah. Beetlejuice is pretty big.
Yeah.
But, Dyson Sphere.
I'd be willing to bet that's where they might go.
In the old Star Wars canon, they had, was it Starkiller?
That's isn't that what was in
Starkiller Base was the planet.
Yeah.
Starkiller Base.
And
they had this other
Star
thing.
Starkiller was Skywalker's first name in the comic.
Oh, was it?
Slash script.
Right. They had this thing, Jerry, and what it did was it took the power of stars, and it was able to do stuff with the power of stars. It's this kind of weird, kind of space stationy thing. And
The Starforge. That one.
Starforge.
Where it was just siphoning the energy straight off it and doing the infinite fleet.
Uh-huh.
On the Rakatan Empire. That was good. I want that. Yeah, I don't want that in this film, though.
If
I want
we had
that in my
that,
next films.
And if they ended the movie with maybe Thrawn in it, I think that would be... Is it Thrawn?
Thrawn would be good. You know, I'd like to see Thrawn.
Because Thrawn would leave an opening for a spin-off of something. I would sooner watch movies about characters like Thrawn than flipping Mandalorians. I know me and you disagree on the whole Mandalorian thing, Jerry, but I think they're
a question.
I think the whole Boba Fett thing is shit. Yeah. It's like, oh.
Now, is Rey turning to the dark side? Because we've seen her with the red Swiss Army lightsaber. Hold on,
before we go to there, what about the Obi-Wan movie then? Is everyone against this? I would like, is he not set to reprise his role? There was some discussion. Is it a TV series now as well, or is it a movie they're talking about?
It was a movie they're talking about.
So it is tentatively on.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor signed the contract.
I could take a bit of Ewan McGregor.
I'm not entirely certain where they're going to go with it, because he's still young enough that it could be before he dives off onto Tatooine, because otherwise it's just an old...
What do you mean he dives off onto... Oh, yeah.
He's just an old guy
living in a
cave.
Yeah, because he spends the next 18 years just sitting in a cave murdering people.
Banthas.
Yeah.
Sand people.
Tusken Raiders, whatever. Yeah. He's just a murder hobo at that point. Yeah. 18 years of him sitting, eating his mushrooms in his cave and occasionally wandering out and screaming at Tusken Raiders and witching fears. There's not a huge fight there.
With the appropriate sound effects added to that, of course.
Yeah, we'll just rock that back and forth with an editor.
But, you know, he can still go on vacation.
But then he's not protecting the child.
He could take a child with him.
He took the young Skywalker with him, and then the young Skywalker who didn't know him.
That's a good point. That would be a weird uncle thing going on.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
At that point, he's better off just sitting in his cave murdering Tuskens.
Will he maybe be just sitting at the side of the farm shouting in, is he okay? Fine, thanks, I'll check back in a week.
It is an interesting question, though, right? In the old canon, right, what did Kenobi do? Was it ever addressed? No. Was it ever really looked into what he did?
Probably why they're looking at it.
No, there was nothing at all. In fact, so much so that some of the fan fiction that came out before the original trilogy, or before the 1, 2, and 3 was made after the original trilogy, they tried to work out why there were glaring inconsistencies.
Yeah.
So things like R2-D2 wandering around, and he didn't, you know, I don't remember.
He didn't recognize,
I don't remember owning a droid before, and people were going, well, you know, Clone Wars, what if the Clone Wars were just Jedi clone armies, and he wasn't Ben Kenobi, he was Obi-Wan Kenobi. That was his clone designation. Ah, and they came up with really intricate, because there was nothing there. There was just a gaping hole of nothingness that just went down. So, yeah, potentially, maybe he'll just take a couple of weeks off and go cruising around, you know, Cata Nemoidia or something.
There's plenty of things for him to do, though, because, like, he could, like, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru could be in Hawk to the huts.
Yeah.
And he could come in and sort them out.
That's true, yeah.
Or could be a rebellion story where he tries to set up the rebellion and just gets really disheartened just seeing the Empire beat
You never set up a rebellion where you're hiding Luke, though.
Yeah, that'd be off well for that.
That'd be like a giveaway.
There's a difficulty here. He can't do anything that would make him too well-known obvious.
And at no point can he draw a lightsaber, because all of a sudden there's a Jedi on that planet. Vader's still going to be hunting.
It'll be weird. It could end up being like Trainspotting, which I have no problem with.
I think you're right. I'd like to see more stuff in the Star Wars universe. And there's so many places they can go, including the comics, some of the novels, and the computer games. They don't need to keep focusing on
these characters
and that very narrow circle that we have from the original trilogy. Mm. Everything needs to come back to them. You know,
I think
at some point, I'm sure Finn is going to turn out to be Billy Dee Williams' son, Lando. It's just going to turn out Lando's. it's just going to be Lando's son.
Incestuous.
Yeah, everything is bent back on itself. Whereas they should just be going like Rogue One. Yes, it was tangential to the original trilogy.
Yes.
But it was a story by itself, and you didn't really see anybody you recognize. Mon Mothma was there, but we'll ignore her. But that was essentially Dirty Dozen in space. It was a war story in space. They could go do a buddy cop film. Well, you can do a buddy cop film on Coruscant with, you know, a droid and the cop. You know, you can do whatever you want.
This is my point with dealing with the huts, for example.
The setting is there.
We did the huts.
You don't need to keep. You had the hut.
We did the huts in the prequels.
Yeah,
you got the huts.
Well, that's true.
What Thrawn gives you is there's two things that Thrawn brings to the table, right? One is he's a character that the vast majority of the viewing audience will never have heard of. They won't know. Younger ones will. The fan base might,
because he features quite heavily in the current Star Wars cartoons.
Oh, is he in the cartoons?
Yeah, and the cartoons are as far as Disney are concerned, canon. So he has quite
So he's already in there.
So he's in there. So people are familiar with him that maybe didn't read the expanded universe and wouldn't have known him.
Well, what I like about the Thrawn story is, one, it the galaxy opens up so much more because of where they find him, way out on the Outer Rim. I believe he's discovered. He's basically a warrior. And they're so impressed with him, they bring him on board. Thrawn has a very difficult relationship in the early days with Vader. Vader ends up actually working for Thrawn. Thrawn is promoted above Vader. This is in the old canon. I'm not sure how it works out now. So there, that gives you an interesting prequel development to go back and look at the life of Vader through the eyes of Thrawn, potentially, if you want to try and have that character go back in. But in the Thrawn stories, I'm almost certain they find a way to actually travel to another galaxy. So they actually do long term travel. The exploration goes even much further, because apparently, if I remember correctly, there's some massive external threat or something.
The Yuuzhan Vong. They're all bio-shapers. They're essentially tyrannids in Star Wars. They're all bio-shapers.
There's a massive story there to be told. And Thrawn could be the key that unlocks a lot of that.
I think they just need to break out of the everything needs to come back to the 1970s and 80s films.
I think it's time to move on.
This is what I'm thinking. Because you see, if you took something like World War II French resistance against an occupying force, the Germans at the time, reskin that to some Star Wars on a world could be very interesting.
That's the original trilogy.
Because if you look at it, they're basically just terrorists.
But just focusing on like one city, one group.
Peacekeepers, woo!
Rom-coms.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see the first Twi'lek rom-com.
So, the thing about it is that's a rehash again, Justin. You know, look, the Star Wars universe is absolutely enormous. There's far more interesting things going on within that universe than the Skywalker story. I know that sounds sacrilegious to almost say that.
Well, but someone's going to turn up to the hobby weekend and just, you know, dueling glove out.
And do you know what?
I have with a lightsaber.
They can slap me with a lightsaber all they want.
You got permission.
You whip out your lightsaber, okay? You can bring out your blue one and I will whip out my pink one. And we will do battle, okay? A friendly battle.
Anger is not the way of the Jedi.
But that's
what I like to call it.
Lightsaber classes now.
But if you look at it, the film saga, which is what the Tiny Fighting Men games we're talking about are based on, it's 40-ish years in 4,000 plus years of
Jedi
of
Empire kind of thing.
Of that galaxy's history.
Yeah.
Why just keep going back to the same 40 years? It's like in our 2,000 year history of going, you know what's really interesting? March to August of 1987. Those months were ideal. We should base everything around those 3 months and only those 3 months all the time. Every new game should be based on something that happened during those 3 months in 87. Oh, well, right as time it was. Don't worry about making anything else.
So would you go right back to the beginning, have a look at the first Jedi, the setting up of the temple as a movie?
Well, you could look at, look.
There's so much. There's physically nothing you couldn't do.
The Knights of the Old Republic is those times when the Jedi had such power.
Yeah.
Okay. There's so much that you could, like, that's where you get your, what is it? Your 40 samurai or whatever you have your. Yeah. You know, there's so much that could be explored there in that past. And then after Vader with Thrawn, there's so much on the Outer Rim. There's so much more that you could do. You know, it's the fact that every movie has to have a little Millennium Falcon in it. You know, it's like,
but there are some characters I'd still like to see explored. Like, I would like to see a movie that revolves pretty much solely around Vader going off and doing stuff, because the last few minutes in Rogue One where he's kicking ass, I'm like, I would really like to see a movie where Vader actually kicks ass.
You say that, but I'm not sure you actually would, because every time, right, so those last few minutes of Rogue One were spine-tinglingly good, but they didn't half make the rest of the movies he appeared in look shite.
But he was old.
No, Rogue One took place mere days, maybe weeks before he killed Obi-Wan Kenobi in that slow motion saber battle.
I'm thinking more about the Return of the Jedi, but even then he wasn't that much older.
No, the Return of the Jedi was still only a period of 5 years
was
or so.
Was it not
after.
That he'd been at his summer house rejuvenating just after that? And the reason he was so crap in the other movies was that he had been away from it for too long?
In his summer house?
Yeah, you remember the
He has a fortress on Mustafar where he spends his time.
But summer house? Okay.
That's how it was described to me after the movie. It's just stuck in my head.
Is that where he mated with Padme?
It's on a lava planet, and it's him basically being taken care of by medics and stuff.
He's got a special Bacta tank.
Bacta tank.
And he crawls in and takes all the stuff off.
But look, that's boils up.
I know, it's bump.
To try and explain it away, right, is just really... The reality is the reality. Mm. We're talking about movies, we're talking about actors, and we're talking about the ability of special effects to be able to do amazing couldn't do then.
I'm not asking for a Yoda.
But I don't want to see another Vader story. You know, we know the Vader story. We know how he was born-ish. We know how he was found. We know how he turned. We know how he redempted. We know how he died. We know everything. In fact, we know too much about Vader, the same way as we now know too much about Han Solo. Mm. Okay? The more we know about these characters, the less interesting they are. That's the ultimate thing.
The mistake goes.
I'll go to this movie and go, it's interesting the first 15 minutes, and I'm pretty bored now.
No, you will wish you didn't know the shit, and that's the danger with the Obi-Wan Kenobi stuff. Yeah. Okay?
Although, I could make the internet hate me right now and say that Hollywood could, and possibly might, because they do it with every bloody thing, is reboot the original trilogy and redo them.
Nah.
It makes you cringe.
They've done it. They do it every 6 months with Spider-Man.
Hmm. Yeah.
How would you feel?
Spider-Man's not Star Wars.
No, but wait.
I could see him do it in 20 years' time.
Yeah, but let's say 20 years' time, right? Let's say nothing is beyond it, because we know that they could reboot anything, right? Yep. So let's say nothing is beyond it. We're getting a long way from the hobby weekend here, but how would you feel about them saying,
it's all terrible.
If I can still have James Earl Jones as Vader, I'm happy enough.
He'll be dead by then.
No, he'd be
gone. Let's clarify something here now, before we get too far in. There's a remake and there's a reboot. Are we talking about?
A reboot. So, reboot the entire Star Wars thing.
So
the same way as
Marvel.
So
the plot line's up for grabs.
Everything goes.
And the characters are up for grabs.
Yeah.
So it's not just a remake then. So
no, it's not a remake. It's a reboot, the way they did with the Marvel. Because there have been previous Marvel movies. Yep.
Well,
they ignored the Hulk.
But the Hulk comes down to who owns him.
Yeah.
In the same way as Spider-Man. A better way would be to look at Star Trek.
Yeah. Star Trek's an excellent example.
Because they rebooted that. They changed things. They brought back people from the original, like Spock, and went, ooh, this is Spock from alternate timeline type of thing. Yeah. And depending on who you talk to, I loved them. Well, I loved the first one. I love the first two. There's a third I haven't seen yet. But I like them because I'm not a big Star Trek fan. And they were more like Star Wars. JJ never thought he was going to get to make Star Wars. So he went, if I could lens flare and do big space battles, this is what it would look like.
He could play with the characters and the plot lines and stuff because you weren't as invested in Star Trek.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And whereas my friends and my brother, who are massive Trekkies, God, they hate those films.
Really?
Oh, they are the worst thing in the world ever. And if you're a Star Trek fan, I think about 80% of Star Trek fans come down on that. This is terrible. You've destroyed
really?
All. Oh, as one thing my brother pointed out, it was like, how does she, at one point there's like I can't understand Romulan or something. All right, does anybody here speak it? And O'Hara goes, oh, I speak all three dialects type of thing, and jumps up and sits in the seat. That was the bit that killed it for my brother. That's the first film. It's only like 15 minutes in. He's going, they didn't even know Romulans existed. Where are they going with this? And they just take the entire history and chuck it out the window. So if we take that as the example of a reboot, Star Wars, they start off and they go, oh, never told you what happened to your father, did you? No. I'm your father. Let's get in the ship. You're not force sensitive, I am, but you're completely forcing me in. Oh, great. And that's our new Luke Skywalker for the new millennium in the reboot.
Yeah.
Who can't do any Jedi tricks and stuff. They could potentially just go, all of this, all the things you loved, in the bin.
This is why I think the internet probably hits me right now for even mentioning it.
Here's the thing though, like the Star Trek reboot pretty much fizzled out.
Hmm. Because it wasn't Star Trek enough for the Star Trek fans, and it was still too much Star Trek for people who didn't care about Star Trek.
Well, look at Enterprise and Discovery. Both have kind of fizzled out. Mm. So that's the last series that were brought out.
Yeah, because they weren't I'm looking forward to seeing some of the Picard one.
Yeah.
And do you know what?
I've heard rumors about the Picard one.
But wait. There we go. There we go. We have just basically we've just basically got Disney off the hook.
Hmm.
Because we've turned around and we've said, all of this expanded stuff you did, we just weren't that interested. Oh, you're doing one based on a character we know. Oh, yeah, we'll watch a bit of
that.
Yeah. So the hypocrisy, even in our own words.
No, because that was the inhaling of, oh, my God, Picard apparently is worse than Discovery and the
God.
Other one.
I'm still tempted to watch it because I still enjoy the feels of Jean-Luc.
Every time they approach an IP that you know with somebody that you know, you're always going to be comparing it to not only what came before, but how you viewed it at that point in your life.
Yeah.
And how a lot of the reason that there's kickback against the current Star Wars films is
we were all like three years old.
And
yeah.
I went, oh, little Ewoks and stuff, they're great. And then you went and seen 1, 2, and 3, and it was like, who the hell had Gungans? They're the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You watch teddy bears with sticks take on and beat the Empire, but you think Gungans are ridiculous because you're no longer that age.
Now, we only think one Gungan.
Well, that's a big pass. Because he's Brian Blessed. But yeah, so you're always comparing. So every time they go back to do another film that ties into the original trilogy, or if they were to, God forbid, reboot the original trilogy, you'll always be comparing them to those things.
What's the little penguin things from the latest one?
The porgs. They just need to get away from them all.
If you were Disney and you were
porgs are protected species in Ireland.
Yeah.
They're puffins. The island is covered in puffins.
Okay.
They couldn't kill them all, so they all had to be left in shot, at which point people are going to go, why is that covered in puffins? So they created the porgs.
They digitally put porgs where the puffins were.
And then anytime you're looking at it far away, you see like 50 black and white things, you're just going, they're porgs. Not that he's on Skellig Michael.
Have you ever tasted a puffin?
No, I'm feeling like a hand cranked in the works here.
If you were Disney and you ever contemplated, oh yeah, let's actually reboot Star Wars.
Yeah, never do that.
Would you not start with the prequels and we'll do the prequels and see how that goes?
I think they might finish this cycle and then roll on through to redo the original trilogy.
I have them
in chronological order.
I have a feeling.
No, I think Disney.
There'll be people within Disney.
Then
there'll
be the prequels because it's on past it. Weird.
I have a feeling that there'll be people within Disney
looking at it
who will be that will be sitting these past few years going, this was probably one of the most difficult investments we have ever made.
Mm.
Working with this story, you may as well be trying to reboot the Bible.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's,
which is up for reboot.
Which didn't work when Noah came out.
But here's the thing. Love them or hate them, the Marvel Cinematic Universe seems to be doing quite well.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's because one guy's in charge, pulling all the strings, Kevin Feige, decides where everything goes, including the Spider-Man stuff that Sony do.
Yeah.
Kevin Feige, because obviously Marvel Studios is owned by Disney, Kevin Feige's been signed up to do the next batch of Star Wars films, not as a director, but as that overseer here's how the story should map out, here's where we want it to go, and this is the tone we want for our
films.
The
difficulty is he's inherited such a mess.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what he does. Will he be a Denisoff and Wise, bearing in mind that they run Game of Thrones into the toilet before jumping ship to do 3 Star Wars films? Or will he be, will he continue?
That's a good point, that overarching someone has the knowledge of where this is going, because when George Lucas was making the movies, everyone's like, oh, I wonder where George is going to take this and his unified vision.
Yeah.
Then Disney took it over and then went, well, they're going to take it this way and then they're going to flip-flop on that and take it a different way. And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
What's next? Who's going to flip-flop which direction? I would have liked to have seen one particular story actually played out.
Yeah, well, it's what I like about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There is a cohesion to all of it. Even watching something like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there are moments when the movies impinge on the TV series, and I really like that.
It's insanely good the way the Marvel stuff ties together.
But take Ant-Man as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Feige got rid of the director on Ant-Man, who's Edgar Rice, who's done Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Baby Driver, all of these things. He does really good things. And for Ant-Man, if you've seen Ant-Man, it's very comic.
Mm-hmm.
But something Edgar was doing in there wasn't fitting Feige's idea of what they wanted Ant-Man to be. So with it like two-thirds done or more, they went, nah, bye.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to turn around and go, that's not fitting our vision, a lot of people at the time went, oh my God, it must be a train wreck of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Tank Engine pun, not included there, but good. So they got somebody else in to finish it off and reshoot bits. And you're watching it and you're going, it feels kind of like an Edgar Wright thing. You know, Ant-Man's a really good film. So obviously Feige has a very set idea of where he wants the MCU to go. So hopefully he'll do something similar with Star Wars.
There's no issue with that.
Yeah.
And I have a very set idea of what I want the Star Wars Legion hobby weekend to be. Mm. It's going to be a weekend of awesomeness. We're going to build a really cool 18-foot long Star Wars table.
Oh, we're doing a single table again? We're not doing multiple zones?
No. We're going to do one big-ass table, cool table.
Visions of Hoth.
Yeah, so it'll not be Hoth. We're not going snow. Well, I don't know what we're doing yet, but we're not going snow.
Okay.
Stay tuned. If you're interested in coming along, please consider coming over, joining the Cult at Games, because they will get the first announcements and stuff on that. But we will be putting up information soon. And it's a global event. There'll be digital tickets where we basically all get together and just enjoy Star Wars miniatures on our tabletop together with live streams and live blogging. We have a few things going.
I'll save this for later. Just had a brainwave.
Oh, I wondered what the smell was.
I thought I was having a stroke.
Okay, right. On the topic of sci-fi, there's a Kickstarter out there running at the moment, which is... It completely gobsmacked me, okay? It's called Obsidian Protocol, okay? It's a mech Kickstarter. Yeah. I know. I knew you'd be excited by this. And these mechs are beautiful. The Kickstarter is on fire, but it's completely kind of come from under the radar. It's another one of these, just a genius somewhere has just created just some amazing stuff.
More than tripled their funding goal.
So we managed to grab a prototype copy to have a look at the miniatures up close. So join us now as we take a little bit of a look through the minis and some of the prototype components of Obsidian Protocol.
Hey folks, we're here having a look at the Obsidian Protocol. This is a demonstration set that we've been sent over from China. It's currently on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting little game. It's set in the 22nd century, and mankind has discovered alien tech deep inside the moon. And it's called the Moonrise Era, where everything goes great. They find these black boxes full of fantastic technology, and the world rips itself apart. More or less, as nation struggles against nation to try and get their hands on the tech. About 50 years after that, when mankind has crawled back out of the dirt of the sort of the big civil war, what's left behind are mega corporations and civilizations that have sort of grown up from the remnants of the past.
Yeah.
America's gone, China's gone, they're all gone, and what's been left behind are various factions who've gone, we're not having another war. There isn't going to be a war. This is going to be a nice peaceful thing now.
Okay.
But instead they fight their own black war inside the moon as they try and get their hands on the black boxes.
Uh-huh.
So it's a tactical mech combat game set inside the moon as people war for this advanced alien tech to try and push their agenda. And I presume at some point in the future, when one mega corporation or faction has sort of got over their opponents, they will use this to then ruffle stomp their way across the earth, bringing a brave new world.
You know, if they've got the shiny boxes up in the moon, you're going to want to go get them.
Hmm. Yeah, they're called black boxes because, like a flight recording black box, they're practically indestructible. Nobody can get inside to see what's in them. So they've had to sort of reverse engineer the tech, which is where the mechs come in. And this is a fascinating concept of the game. that the mechs, it's very similar to Battletech in that you build your faction and you build your mech, and the mechs themselves are magnetized. So if you're playing a specific faction, you may discover that some mechs are cheaper than others, some components are more expensive, pilots are better, that type of thing. So you would actually go, right, well, for this particular setup, I want to have, now I'm going to cross the streams here because I think these are actually two different factions, but you might go, I want a sniper rifle instead of the bigger real gun, and pop that on. You've also got things like the backpack, so that's actually a heatsink, but you can get things like shield generators, and this fellow over here has got a rocket launcher, well, of which the rockets actually float around by themselves whenever they're launched, so they have a certain tracking. Mm. It's a fascinating mechanic because it gives you a list building, but also allows you to get into the building with the mechs as well, because you don't have to have a set defined setup for your mechs. You can chop and change as much as you need to.
Yeah.
And the factions themselves also have this interesting setup where you've got the Reconstructionist League, mm-hmm. who are actually run by, they've got an AI computer called Mentor. And Mentor goes, this is the way the community should be run. It's for the good of the community. Everybody will work together. Here's the best thing that you need to do. You need to go and have a kid.
Really?
You do. Mentor says you do. You should do that.
Are you sure the world's ready for a media of a kid?
Yes, exactly. Because Mentor, the super AI, would not come up with something that's stupid. So Mentor runs the league of the Reconstructionist League. And in that, they have access to a lot of cheap deployable units. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not top of the line. There are different corporations within the factions will manufacture bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. So the league could be quite floody in that you've got quite a lot of mechs, maybe not tip top, but they do the job. You've got the network, and the network are much more elite. And you've got these builds where you've got very small groups of either drones or got little drones as well, drones and mechs.
And the drones are also magnetized.
Yeah, because you can get different types. And through your elite units, you build your faction that way. And there's a third faction who have decided that the idea that people should be downloading their consciousness into mechs and running mech armies on the moon is a bad thing. And they go, no, mankind's great. So they rock their mechs the old-fashioned way with people inside them pressing buttons and pulling levers.
That sounds good to me.
But they focus more on drones, so you might have a massive drone army instead. So when you've got the likes of your mechs built, you actually end up with a little setup like this, which is your dashboard, and you pop in the relevant armament and weaponry and chassis that you've built. Right. And then you take something like this. So I think I've been roughly going through the actual mechanics of the game, but you have a phase where the drones all move. And then after the drones have done their movement, then you select your mech pilot. Mm-hmm. And then you choose when they're going to activate, 1 to 6. And so you might decide that you're going to activate later on in the hope that somebody comes out and presents themselves as a better target. Or you might go, I want to go first. So all the mechs activate simultaneously on that number.
Yeah, this guy's hanging out in the open. Let's hit him early.
Yeah, but you might find out that he's also decided to activate at the same time. So as you're firing at him, they're coming towards you. Yeah. Whereas if you waited, he may have already made his move, so he's an easier target to hit.
I see.
But even things like the missiles, you've got options. So if a missile's coming towards you and it's tracking, you could try and shoot it down. Mm-hmm. You could try and dodge it, get behind a building. You can try and hack it to reprogram it to go and hit somebody else.
Bother someone else.
In fact, possibly the fella who's just fired at you. Or you can deploy chaff to try and explode it. So it's a very tactical game. They're still running through playtest and beta rules, but the guys who've been working on this started developing it in college in, I think, like 2007, 2008. So, and there's a great bit on the Kickstarter, which I'm sure our editor will cut in because he loves me, where they're actually playing the very early prototype version of this in college with little wireframe models and blue tack on bases on just a hex grid.
That's nice.
So Obsidian Protocol, the idea behind it is the core pledge, which is kind of what we see here, although they've added quite a lot more on from the Kickstarter.
Yeah, all the stretch goals they've been unlocking.
It will be hard plastic tooled, but then they also have expansion packs and stuff that currently look like they're going to be resin. Yeah. If they get the funding to hit hard plastic, they'll go back and do them. But they'll be fully modular with the magnets in the kit.
All right, so you're not having to try to magnetize these. These are designed to be magnetized from the ground up.
So even things like the sockets where the arms join in already have the sink in it for a 4 mil magnet there, as do the corresponding parts.
On the torsos?
On the torso, and the things like the backpacks and some of the smaller pieces like the drones have these little sort of 1.5 mil magnets. So
that's cool.
It's all ready to rock and roll. They are still playtesting and looking at how they can sort of streamline things because they want the game to be as playable as possible. Thank you very much. While it's ongoing, so between now and actually delivery, which I think is aimed for sort of the end of next year, they're hoping to get as much refinement in as possible. And the community behind it have already got massively on board. I mean, some of the fans, the amount of work they've done in breaking down the factions and how they build and what where you can play them is just insane already. So
you see, this just puts me in my happy place because I've always wanted a game like this where you do have modular mechs on the table. You can build them out however you want. It goes back to an old video game I used to play, Armored Core. Mm-hmm. I think it was on the PS2, where you were literally just a mech pilot going out doing missions. So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so subterranean fighting in the pit of Mars. Let us know what you think of Obsidian Protocol, guys. And if you're interested, you've a few more days left on this Kickstarter to back it.
Okay, guys, we're back. Right. Kickstarters.
Mm-hmm.
Unusual weekender this weekend, but that's what you get when you don't have a Ben.
Well, that is true. So he did leave us a list. We just ignored his list.
We just totally ignored his list. Right, so Kickstarters this week. I want to have a quick look at Oathsworn Into the Deep Wood.
Mm-hmm.
This is a game launching very shortly, okay? October 8th, guys. If you haven't seen it, we have a Let's Play and some other content up related to this. Jerry, both yourself and Justin have had a chance to spend some time with this.
We have indeed.
Can you give us a bit of the inside track?
It's an interesting little game because we've got the likes of an app or a book-driven story mode, which is essentially half of an encounter. But you don't have to play it simultaneously. So you don't have to do your story mode and then immediately go into the encounter sort of tabletop miniatures game. Yeah. You can have like an RP session. Mm-hmm. And then if you get to the end of that and you know what you're going to be facing the next week when you come in back into it, then you can set up the encounter. Or if you've got the time to run through, you could do the entire story and encounter in one big session.
Uh-huh.
So essentially every sort of scenario is broken into two halves. But it's a really interesting world. There's sort of city-states or walled cities that are being encroached by the Deepwood. The Deepwood is not a place you want to travel lightly. So all these cities or towns are connected by the wire road or chain road. And essentially it's just literally just a chain link rope that runs from city to city that people travel along, because if you get wandered off the beaten path or stray too far, you'll get butchered horribly by the unusual things that are encroaching. So a lot of Oathsworn is about the bands of adventurers who are brave enough to actually travel from place to place, because the majority of the world is sort of engulfed by nature coming back in a big way.
Mm. Nice. It has a feel of that. What was that Will Smith movie where they came back to Earth?
After Earth? Was the horrible, horrible one with his son?
Yes, the one with his son.
Yeah, that's After Earth.
Yes, when they came back and they landed on Earth.
No, they crashed.
Well, okay. They hard landed on Earth, and Earth had basically decided it had become
jungle,
primal, you know, where everything there was out to kill you. Mm. I love this idea. So these city-states, and then the journey between them, this chain.
Yeah.
Did you follow along? You might even tie yourself to it to try and stop yourself being dragged away by some flipping thing with gnashing teeth.
An actual physical chain.
Yeah.
That's so evocative.
Yeah. One of the things I love about this is that each of your adventures in the game, so if you look at the picture here, you see those little boxes up at the top?
Yes.
Each one of those boxes is an adventure. Right. Self-contained with hidden information that you will only reveal whenever you hit the correct triggers during your sessions.
Wow. Is it Legacy then?
I believe it is.
Yes and no. So in the core set, whenever you're playing through, you won't know what you're encountering, although you might get hints from things like the maps themselves.
Yeah.
Or the app.
Of the city have things drawing in the borders that will sometimes tie into the encounters that are written for it. So there might be a lot of rats or there might be something on it. And it will, when you reach that encounter phase, it will go and pick box six. Mm-hmm. And you open box six and it will contain the monster cards for the encounter and the main monster you're going to fight itself. So in this case, there's like the brood mother, some sort of rat-based.
Like a giant rat.
Yeah. So in that way, it's legacy in that you don't know what you're fighting until you play through the adventure and find it. But that doesn't mean that it's done and dusted and you can't play it again. You can go back and replay them because how you reach the encounter phase can be different every time. You pick up clues and the things that help you along the way, including other sort of NPCs that will join your party as sort of mini player characters who can sort of level up with your group, can be different. So you have the opportunity to get hangers on to come and accompany you and help you out, or you may lose them during fights as well. So, so all of that plays out differently as long as you're taking different choices essentially along the way.
What are the minis like?
Stunning. Very nice.
They're really nice.
We've got some of the 3D renders here.
Did you guys get to see the prototypes?
We had to play with them.
Yeah.
They are.
Like it says, 45 mil scale there, so they're probably, you know.
They're quite big then. They're
fairly chunky because you don't need a huge amount of miniatures, and it is essentially a battle game / board game.
Yeah.
You don't need to have a lot of miniatures on the tabletop. You're playing on a very restricted space.
So what you're doing is you're RPing the game
and then playing out the encounters as fights. So they went for a bigger scale so they could get as much detail sort of crammed in as you can.
Oh, nice.
And they're really interesting how they've decided to explore and actually grow the world from the ground up.
Scroll back up there, Justin.
Okay.
That encounter board thing then.
Yes.
So you're on, like I've seen a city.
That's a hex map.
I've seen a city map, and then how does the city map relate to this?
The city map is a separate thing, so it's basically showing you what locations you have visited during your narrative session.
Yeah, but is that the location then?
Well, that's your encounter location that you will have in each adventure.
That's essentially just a bit of the deep wood there to allow you to stick your miniatures down with a big hex map. So the map there, that's not the only map of the only town or city that you'll visit, but because of the way it's laid out with... essentially paths and, well, not even paths. It's got points of interest on it. So there'll be a map with maybe 20 or 30 circles on it and they're numbered and you'll make a choice and you'll decide you're going to go into the town square. So you go into the town square, which is like number 17 or whatever in your book or your app. Mm-hmm. And you go there and you go, this is happening here right now. And your choices are now 13, 14 and 2. So you put those on. Whereas you might decide that you're going to go to the bakery first, get some bread, go nom, 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 have my bread. And then we're going to go to the town centre. And you go to the town centre. But whatever you were expecting to see maybe have already kicked off and be gone by now. So it goes, go to 2 and 7.
And sounds really alive.
Your other choices disappear because of what you've done and what order you've done them.
It's something I love about the game is the app system is actually voiced by the fellow that played Lord Commander Mormont from Game of Thrones.
Now, which one was Lord Commander Mormont?
He's in a Fate of Impact. He's the big ginger.
Lord of the Night's Watch.
Oh, the big ginger. Right.
Not the big ginger.
He is the big ginger.
He is the big ginger.
Is he not the old guy at the wall?
Yeah, he was ginger.
He was ginger.
Was he ginger? Oh, okay.
You remember him from Fate of Impact. He was an Ivanhoe.
Okay,
he played Ivanhoe's father.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, I like him.
All right. So he voices...
He's the guy that gave the sword to Jon Snow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was in Braveheart.
He does the voice acting for the app-driven version of your story mode.
Nice.
Which is quite
Cosmo.
Nice.
And the story was written by, was it Dembski Bowden?
Dembski Bowden. Aaron Dembski Bowden, I believe,
Dembski Bowden. Yeah,
I believe
it was. He was involved in the writing of this, wasn't he? So.
Yeah. Although one of the other cool things is they have a dual combat system in this when you hit your encounter.
Yeah.
So you can either go for the dice, which is your usual roll for randomness.
Yes.
Or if you see the 140 might cards, they are the mathematical probabilities done in a small deck. So you can draw from the deck or roll the dice as you desire. So you can either go with the cards that are a little more county or go for the randomness of the dice.
Oh.
Sweet.
Okay. I don't.
It lets you play with the probabilities of how safe you want to be.
Is that like a difficulty level controller there?
It's just essentially free choice.
Say you were rolling 2d6 and you roll them X number of times. You know that bell curve you get?
Yeah.
So theoretically, although they have different amounts of successes and the like on the dice, the cards should replicate the bell curve. So you'll have maybe one fluff, one crit, the majority of the stuff in the middle. Uh-huh. And it's, so you shuffle them and as you play them, as if you were playing a rolling. So instead of rolling three dice, you turn three cards.
Playing the odds.
So you actually get the bell curve, in its entirety.
That type of thing.
Rather than
the spikes you get on
rather
dice.
Rather than me rolling the dice and always getting three ones, despite the fact I should never. In fact, sometimes the dice don't even have
ones.
So
you're guaranteed to get the best and the worst.
Yeah.
Whereas if you do the dice,
it could go anywhere.
You could still end up just getting the worst.
And you can play either or during the game.
So you can just choose as you go through which one you want to do.
You've already pulled out the worst card in the deck, and you're going right.
Things are only going to get better.
So I'm going to just roll dice in the next encounter until we get to the whatever we're going to be fighting later.
Because I know that
deck is now stacked in my favor, so I'm not going to hit the worst on that card deck. So I don't pull from the card deck. I'm just going to roll dice.
Some interesting choices to be had if you're in that. That's a very interesting mechanic.
And then they have what's called an effort mechanic in there as well.
Yeah.
So you'll have your weapon stat, right? So that'll maybe generate a yellow dice. I can roll as many of those white dice as I want, because that's how much effort I'm throwing in there.
Yes.
The way you miss in this game is if you roll two blanks.
Mm-hmm.
So the more dice you roll, the more chance of higher damage you have, but the more chance you have of missing.
Yes.
Which is a really nice mechanic.
Yeah, so it's a tempering effect.
Yes.
You could throw as much effort as you want at it.
Yeah.
But if you overdo it, you overcook it, you're in trouble.
Exactly. It's something I really like about the system as well.
Well, guys, Oathsworn is about to kick off on the 8th. Definitely well worth a look. So we also have some content coming out for that to try and give you a deeper look at the game. So go and check that out. Okay, next up, Journey into Midblight.
Mm.
Jerry, what can you tell us about this one?
It's an interesting little Kickstarter. It very much reminds me of the sort of stuff that was coming out of Rackham. So it's miniature-based. They are just essentially the larger scale sort of 32 heroic miniatures. But there's so much character in
little
these goblins and dwarves. Yeah. And you've got this sort of bat-like creature.
Igor.
Yeah.
So these are lovely. They're beautiful little sculpts.
Yeah. And every one of them is like this. Every one of them is a little character model.
Yeah.
And there's so many things. Yes, the pug is using a set of sausages to hold himself aloft.
So, that's cool.
Yeah, don't knock the moon pug. So essentially, it's just a bundle of joy. Every miniature is just a delight, whether it's the lovely dwarves, which I'm pretty sure is why Ben said we should be looking at this, or the fantastic goblins.
Look at that. These are beautiful.
Yeah, they've really gone out of their way. The next one up, I think, has got a long rifle. Is it?
Yes. Look at it.
So Niels Hudson. And they've got this very... I know Rackham did a set of ogres that had this sort of look to them.
Yeah.
So they've got a very sort of Eastern Europe feel, a very Slavic feel for the dwarves, and the goblins are just... Well, the goblins are goblins. They're just screaming off the deep end.
Beautifully goblin-y, though. You know, it's...
There's all your one more. Connor McLeod.
Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod.
He might be. Can you see what... Wilhelm?
Wilhelm the Conqueror.
Yeah, and he is literally swinging a conquer on a string, like we all used to do at school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a delightful gorgeous set of miniatures that everybody needs to own. There's no two ways around that.
Absolutely.
There's no game attached, but at the same time means everything's a game with them. So,
well, this is it. That they are beautiful role-playing pieces. I love those. Mm. I love those.
Coming in metal by the looks of it.
Yeah. Oh, sweet, sweet metal. I think there's a few of them also have the option for resin. Mm. I think one or two of them as well.
Is it funded at the moment?
Yes, it is.
Funded,
Three times funded.
Three times funded, and it's not a massive Kickstarter, but it's one that is absolutely worthy of being checked out, guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's little artisans like this, realistically, guys. We want to be supporting these guys because, you know, these guys then blossom and they bring out more of their creativity. The creativity in creating those beautiful little sculpts You know, that's what it's all about, man. You know, you want to see that. So definitely do. Take a chance. Go on over. Show them your support. Mm-hmm. And grab yourself some beautiful, beautiful little minis and get them in metal.
Have you got favorite sculpts from what we looked at?
Yes, I do. I do.
I'll scroll back up if you give me a second. Just so I don't make nobody scroll back sick. Up. Scrolling.
Let's see.
So I'm at the goblins.
Okay.
Bop.
Right. That's my second favorite.
Yeah.
Scroll down. Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Really? Not Moonpug?
That one.
That is cool. I'm leaning towards Moonpug myself, Justin, as well.
Yeah, I like the Moonpug.
I really like William the Conqueror, just because I really want to paint the Conqueror on the miniature. It's just so random.
This gentleman here.
Yeah.
Look how happy he looked swinging his Conqueror.
And then scroll down just one more wee bit. Uh-huh. No, scroll up. Just two more wee bits. Keep going. Oh, slow down. No, Mills. Down. Him. There's something about the beard.
Very well done.
On that I just absolutely love.
Scroll up a minute. 1 second, the sculpt above. What is he holding on to? It looks like a woodlouse type thing.
Yes, it's a grub.
Yeah.
It's a grub with a face. So it is.
Who knows?
Are they implying that these guys are really small then?
Well, the Conqueror was bigger than him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There could be little fairies at the bottom of the garden, or maybe that's just a really big maggot.
On the topic. So they're about 6 days, well, maybe about 3 days to go by the time you see this, guys. Mm-hmm. Right, final one. Mm. Ark World, second edition, on the topic of beautiful sculpts.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Let's check out what Ark World are bringing to the table.
Oh, their second edition has been storming it recently. So they've managed to unlock 4 factions so far.
Yeah.
And every time he unlocks a new faction, you're just looking at going, that's insanely good.
Yeah.
Even the avatar-like elves, I think, could be made look nice if they weren't, you know, blue-skinned elves. I have problems with blue-skinned elves.
You have problems with blue-skinned
elves? It just brings me back to James Cameron's terrible film where they kept telling us it was all going to be good and then we all went to see it and it was terrible.
We went to see that 3 times.
And we saw it in 3D one time.
And we saw it in 3D as well. It was amazing.
It was crap in 3D.
I only went to see it in 3D because everybody was going, oh, 3D, it's going to be the future. And then you watched it and you were just going, it's the Smurfs.
Best movie ever made. It's there in my top 3. Avatar, Titanic, and Terminator. So,
I thought you were going to say,
you know,
Avatar, sorry, the Smurfs, and Dances with Wolves.
No, sorry.
Just Dances with Wolves.
Die Hard. Best movie ever made, according to Justin. So we got to.
Well, I don't understand.
Even though Bruce Willis says this, it is still a Christmas movie.
I don't understand what the hell we're waiting so long for the next 5 movies. There's like another 5 movies in the Avatar series all planned.
Yes, that's because he's inventing technology to project them directly into your brain.
Well, let's face it. He needs some mechanic to get people to go to the cinema because based off the first one, it's not going to happen.
Right.
But so anyway, so Arkworld second edition.
Let's keep going. So what? Right, so scroll down.
Currently, there's the avatar-like wild elves, which look great, just paint them not blue.
Yes.
We also have the
look. Solo play.
I knew somebody would point that out. Also have the halflings. The halflings have been storming it. There's been a few beautiful sculpts coming out, like the Cook recently, who's bouncing on a hot pot. Fae Kingdoms and Kingdom of the Dead have arrived fairly recently. The recent unlocks, the Kingdom of the Dead, particularly nice. Essentially, it's highwaymen, but you know, zombie bandits. So there's the highwayman wearing his Dick Turpin hat mask.
Oh, I like that.
With the noose around his neck from where he was hung.
Cook?
Yeah, that's your baffling battle cook.
Yep.
These aren't the only people to come up with this idea recently. Somebody else was mentioning the fact that surely halfling cooks are the most fierce of all halflings. So they're the ones who have to A, subdue the food, and B, subdue the halflings from trying to eat the food. Therefore, the cooks are the best.
The beast folk?
Beast folk are beautiful. There's like a pig. Is that her? Yes. Hedge witch. Oh, no, she's not big.
She's
a hedgehog.
Yes.
No,
which is loosely related to a pig.
I imagine so. Just a smaller,
it's like a smaller, spiky pig. Yeah.
There's our
the undead raiders.
Like I say, you can see the noose on his neck.
Yeah.
From his little face.
Oh, I like
the first
that.
Time I looked at them, I'm going, ooh, they look kind of like pirates.
The old man of bones.
Very cool.
Yeah, I think every sculpt that comes out, they're all traditionally sculpted.
Right, I want to see the monsters.
He's still fighting the cad, which is good.
Frost Troll?
Forest Troll's very good, isn't it?
The P-Griff, I can't wait to see what people do with this. So essentially a griffin peacock. So every feather will be a giant feathery eye thing. Going, yeah. You know, it'll just be a riot of colors, like in Bird of Paradise is Screw the Poodle or something. I don't know.
The artisan explorer.
He's the guy who's essentially chronicling everything that's happening in Ark World. So he's the sort of the idea that everybody knows what's going on here because of him.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yes, little troggles. Yeah. The world, the expansion that he's done seems really interesting. And when you're talking about boutique artisan designs and people yes. doing work, everything that I've seen from Ark World has been stunning. I mean, you look at everything, even from the little tiny add-ons, whether it's the rats with the raiders or the troggles with everybody else, you look at it and you go, I could quite happily just spend a couple of days just painting that small miniature.
Yeah.
And then they go, have you seen our giant unusual spider mother thing with mm-hmm. creepy hands? And you're going, no, I haven't. Going, her bum lights up and going, that's terrific and horrific in equal measures. Yeah, I'm in for that. Quid's in.
Well, Ark World 2nd Edition mm-hmm. is on Kickstarter. So they look at three very worthy Kickstarters, guys. Three amazing projects, definitely worth picking out. Before we go, we have a winner. Justin, mm-hmm. On the Claim a Prize page for the Joan of Arc Siege expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this week we're giving away a copy of...
Operation Fire?
Wildfire.
Wildfire. That's thank it. You. Yeah. Thank you guys very much for watching. We'll be back tomorrow morning with XLBS, where we're going to be talking a bit about the responsibility for companies on over their rules. So join us for that one. We're going to go a bit deep on that one. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Lloydie. Ben, we miss you. We hope you're having a nice holiday.
Kisses, and, Ben.
Yeah, we will see you soon. Thank you very much, guys. This has been The Weekender, and you have been awesome. Have a great week of gaming.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe? And remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.